SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Now, where to begin?
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit, the podcast where we tell the tale about the hobbits, if you catch my drift, where we're talking about the news surrounding the two Hobbit movies that are currently in production in New Zealand, and we talk about the whole background of that story and the wonderful world that Tolkien created. With me, as usual, is my fellow co-host, Dave Kill. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Father Roderick.
You're back in warmer areas. I heard you were in the northeast of the United States lately.
I sure was. I was visiting a conference unrelated to The Hobbit whatsoever entitled Hacking Medicine at MIT.
Wow.
Over the weekend.
Hey, you don't have to apologize for that. We understand that there's something else in your life besides The Hobbit.
Hard as that is to imagine, it is true.
It can happen. It's even the fact in my life as well. But that's why we are always happy to podcast on Thursday about The Hobbit, and we can get our weekly shot of Hobbit-related news. And my goodness, there was so much news this past week. I'm just baffled. Normally,
yeah, they really opened the floodgates this week. It's so weird. It really goes in waves, doesn't it?
It does.
Weeks where there's no news, and we just spend an hour on here like, oh God, what are we going to say? And then there's weeks like this where I'm not confident we'll get all the way through.
Well, let's start right away with the news then, and hopefully we'll be able to get through the show notes in time.
You're done. Confound it all, Samwise Gamgee! Have you been eavesdropping?
I haven't been dropping no eaves, sir, honest.
What did you hear? Speak!
Nothing important. Please, Mr. Gandalf, sir, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me in anything unnatural.
I saw the most amazing photo this week, and it was posted all over the web. It was a reunion of the Hobbits, the original Hobbits, the ones that we saw in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And the original actors came together. I don't know exactly what the occasion was, but they made some photos and recorded a very hip video clip that was really amazing. I thought it was so stylish and cool. And the thing that struck me most, just looking at the photos and at the video, was that most of them haven't changed at all. I mean, visually, they still look exactly like the way I remembered them from the movies.
They sure do. Dominic Monaghan maybe he's lost a little hair on top.
Yes, but he still has that same. I mean, there's nothing that a wig can't cure.
That's right.
Wow, I was just like Sam. What's his name?
Sean Astin.
Sean Astin. I mean, it almost seemed as if he was younger than he was when he was filming The Hobbit. I was just
They're all aging quite well.
Yes. Incredible. Being a Hobbit must be very healthy, I guess.
So I think the reason for it, Father, is Empire Magazine. It's been 10 years since Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. And so Empire Magazine's doing like a 10-year sort of reunion celebration of the Lord of the Rings.
Right.
I'm guessing to capitalize a little bit on the interest in The Hobbit. And so Empire Magazine sponsored it.
Very cool. And I guess that they did the video there. I just want to play it once more because it was so cool. It's filmed in black and white and they're just walking down a street. Now they're sitting at a bar, but I don't think it's a real bar. It looks like a photo or film set. You know, the one who changed most is Billy Boyd, plays Pippin. Mm-hmm. And it's just them sitting, talking, and walking in slow motion. There's no content, there's no interview, there's nothing. But wow. Sure looks hip.
It's a trailer for the photo shoot.
Right. Well, they did a very good job with that. And when I see them like that, I was like, gosh, I wish that somehow they could be back on the silver screen as well. I mean, we know, of course, that we'll see Elijah Wood in The Hobbit, but gosh, I'd really like to see the others too in some form or another. If only there could be like a TV series about the world of Tolkien. If only there were enough interest to do that. I would dig that. But anyway, it was good to see them again. Were there any interviews done during the photo shoot, or is that something to probably read in Empire magazine?
Yeah, I suspect it says that the special issue of Empire is coming out later this week. So I imagine that all of that content will probably come out like right after we finish doing the show.
Very cool. All right. And there was a lot more visual, audio-visual stuff online from in the news. I'm trying to find my show notes. Where did they go? Hey, I lost them. Wait a minute. There they are. There was an interview with Stephen Fry, right? On or a talk between Stephen Fry and Peter Jackson?
Yes, that's right. Stephen Fry has this series on BBC called Planet Word that I think is just sort of it's a celebration of storytelling and its influence on language and things like that. And on the most recent episode, there's a part where he actually sits and talks to Peter Jackson very, very briefly, and they just talk about Tolkien and other kinds of books that they both love. And unfortunately, I don't know for you, but the link to the BBC episode, the full episode, doesn't work for me since I'm not in the I'm outside the the UK.
Same here.
So I don't know if it's
all region protected. It's so, you know, for us as Europeans,
there is the YouTube video.
We have the same problem when we try to watch anything from the United States. We get the same message. It's like, you're not from our country. Go away.
But so it is, if you skip on the YouTube video, if you skip ahead to about 4 minutes into it, that's where he starts talking to Peter Jackson.
All right, let me try to do that. And there's also a transcript of the entire interview.
Yes.
But it's more fun to, of course, go. So where do I skip? Hold on.
To about 4 minutes into it.
4 minutes, let's see.
4:10, maybe.
Okay, that should be around here.
Only sell thousands. But one of his contemporaries sells hundreds of millions.
Oh, there you go.
The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings trilogy are the second and third best-selling novels of all time, just after Dickens' Tale of Two Cities.
Oh, wow, they're
New
sitting
Zealand-based
on the set.
Director Peter Jackson has devoted many years to bringing J.R.R. Tolkien's books to the screen.
How cool.
And for him, Tolkien's admixture of Norse, Middle English, and Anglo-Saxon is one key to the enduring success of both the books and the films. Roads go ever, ever on under cloud and under star, yet feet that wandering have gone return at last to home afar. Eyes that fire and sword have seen, and horror in halls of stone, look at last on meadows green.
I'm interrupting here because Stephen Fry keeps going on and on, so I can't interject anything. But I'm just looking at this video, and they show beautiful paintings of Middle Earth that I've actually never seen, these illustrations. Mm-hmm. I saw a painting of, I guess, the Fellowship arriving in Rivendell, recognized the bridge, and some other scenes. But, wow, there was even a scene with, like, a squid-like monster attacking. That must be from the last book, right?
I believe that's from the Fellowship of the Ring when they're outside the Mines of Moria.
Makes me want to see. Oh, of course, yes.
It's the Watcher in the Lake.
Of course, that's it. We just actually confronted the Watcher of the Lake during our Secrets of Middle-Earth podcast, where we entered the Mines of Moria, and during our recording, we were attacked by that same monster, so that was pretty cool. But so you don't know either where these paintings are from or what illustrations these are?
I don't. I'm going to watch this thing all the way through and pay closer attention to the paintings, and maybe it's Jeff Murray or Ted Naismith. Mm. Seems like a lot of the best stuff comes from them, so I'll see if I can figure it out.
These look great. Yeah, they're definitely not Tolkien's. We talked about the new book that's coming out with all the illustrations that Tolkien did himself, but this looks a bit better, to be honest.
And trees and hills they long have known.
I wondered how much you felt, because you adapt these, how much the language matters to Tolkien, because I happen to think he's an extremely good writer of English. I mean, at the level of the sentence, that you really can't improve much, can you?
I mean, it was one of the decisions we made when we were adapting Lord of the Rings, is that we tried to work as much of his language into the script as we could. I just think that one of the beauties of the book of Lord of the Rings, and I actually think it ultimately worked in the movie too, is that they're talking in a language that is beautiful and poetic, and even though it's not one that we're used to hearing on the street, you understand it. It becomes accessible in a funny kind of a way. And I mean, what Tolkien did great with his stories, and especially his use of language, is that he treated them as historical. You know, I think that's the way that we found, you know, that was a door that we entered when we went into the movies, is that this isn't made up. It's not you know, it's not a piece of gobbledygook, you know, set on the planet Zol or some such thing. Every name, every place name, every plant name that Tolkien wrote about, he based in some form of a language. It was a language sometimes that he created himself. It was an archaic old Middle English form of language.
Like a sort of Oakenshield or something
like that. Yeah, everything meant something. Yeah, everything actually had a reality, and it was almost like he did literally create a history.
Wow. That's the first part of the interview, but it's all about language. That's not a discussion that I expected on a TV program like that. You expect them to chat about the production, the special effects, how it is to, you know, recreate, go back to The Hobbit, and instead they have this intellectual discussion about the language in The Hobbit. But this is hopeful, doesn't it? I mean, it shows us that they definitely will respect the language that Tolkien used and won't simplify.
I am highly motivated to go back and watch not just this episode, but this entire series, because this looks like a really cool series.
And Stephen Fry, by the way, for those of you that are listening to this show, but you remember his name, but you wonder what his connection to The Hobbit is, he is actually one of the actors in The Hobbit, and he plays the Master of Lake Town, isn't it?
That's right.
So he has probably a small role, but he's very popular, very well-known television personality in the UK. And I didn't know that he had this program, and there's quite a bit of it on YouTube as well. Mm-hmm. Let's listen to part of the rest of the interview.
What I also admire about Tolkien is, like Joyce, his protagonists are reluctant heroes, grounded in a reality, no matter how fantastical the world they inhabit.
But for Tolkien, the real heroes, the true heroes, were the simple folk, the decent folk. What Tolkien's saying ultimately is to be a real hero, if you're good, if you're decent, if you are prepared to offer yourself up to protect your fellow friend. And you have to wonder how much of that came from his experiences in the trenches in World War I.
Jackson is also known as a schlock horror director, where plot is all, and I wonder if, like me, he shares my unabashed love for the master of the genre, Stephen King.
As you say, I think he's one of the great storytellers of our time, of any time, really, and partly because he's so obsessed with storytelling.
That's right. The other thing about Stephen King, which I think is fantastic, is that I don't think he ever invents a character. Every single character he writes about, and these are good and bad, they're sane and they're insane, are an element of him. That he's not afraid to you know, to dig into the dark depths of his worst imagination and create a character out of that. So he literally mines what he considers the most evil part of himself, and he creates an absolute psychopath. But you know it's coming from a real place. Whereas you get somebody who says, now I'm going to write the most evil psychopath in the world, and they kind of make stuff up. And you read it, and it might be horrifying, but you're not connecting with it because you don't recognize any of it.
Yeah, I agree.
It's interesting, this whole discussion about where the storytelling and the characters come from in the life of an author. There's actually quite a bit of discussion about that when it comes to Tolkien himself, whether or not the stories and the characters in The Lord of the Rings and in the other stories that he wrote are from his personal experience, are a metaphor, are archetypes in his own life or not. What's your take on that, Dave?
I think you can have it both ways. I think this is what Corey Olson, the Tolkien professor, always says too, which is it would be absurd to suggest that his experiences, his life experiences, whether in war or in other places, don't inform the things that he writes. I mean, that's just absurd. People write about what they know, what they've experienced. But I think you can have it that you can say that without actually going down the road of saying, well, the whole thing is actually just an elaborate metaphor for World War I or World War II or World War anything or any particular thing in his life. You know, a good example would be a lot of his romances in his books, and yes, there is romance. For those of you who feel that there's no romance in Tolkien, there most certainly is. It's not modern rom-com romance, but there is romance. In a lot of his romances, there's this sort of recurring motif of sort of men marrying up. You know, Aragorn marrying Arwen, who's this, you know, high and dignified elf lady. Beren marrying, who's a man, marrying Luthien, who's like the most beautiful being inside the circles of Arda. Mm-hmm. And you just see this motif recurring again and again. And a lot of, you know, people in on Tolkien's tombstone and his wife's tombstone, they wrote Beren and Luthien. And it's not to say that he wrote down the way that they met in that story, but rather just that he sees, you know, some of his experience in that he always felt like he had married up when he married Edith. And so I think you can have it both ways.
I think so too. And I think that Tolkien himself quite explicitly said that you shouldn't read any of his stories as just a metaphor of whatever historic mm-hmm. event it is. No, not World War One or anything, but that it is, it transcends that. But at the same time, it is, as Peter Jackson says, it's still written as if it were a history, as if it's real. It's not, it's just a fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
I think that also shows, or Peter Jackson, in a way that he filmed The Lord of the Rings, I think uses that as an inspiration to depict everything as realistic as possible. You don't get a very sugary version of The Hobbit like in the animated version that we saw, where it's kind of a half-baked Disney version of the story. And in games, last week we talked about video games and the way that they depict the world of Tolkien and the stories. I guess you've got both directions. You've got a gamified version of The Hobbit, like in the PC game that came out a couple of years ago, and then you've got the much more realistic approach that you see in War in the North and in Lord of the Rings Online, where you get much more the feeling that there is, the game takes place in a world that is already established and that has a lot more depth than just what you need for the game itself. I don't know about War of the North, by the way, because of that game seems to be more focused on the actual fighting and everything. But I do know that in A Lord of the Rings Online, you can't continuously have the idea that the world is so much bigger than you actually get to know during the game, and there's so mm-hmm. much backstory, and even in the way that they place like certain objects and elements in the landscape, you kind of sense that there's this ancient history that is there, and that it's not even addressed in the narrative of the game, but it's still there, and it adds to the realism of the experience.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think we're seeing this in the. I think that's one of the most interesting things people expect to see about The Hobbit. To what degree does he mediate between the real seriousness of not just the Lord of the Rings book, but the film translations that Peter Jackson made, and the obvious childishness of the Hobbit book itself. So,
yeah, it's I wouldn't be surprised if we'll see, just as in the Lord of the Rings, a lot of literature from the rest of his works somehow integrated in the story of the Hobbit. I mean, I know that they used poems and dialogue from the Silmarillion and just attributed that to certain characters in The Lord of the Rings. They can, of course, do exactly the same in The Hobbit, as long as it fits the character and the situation. But I wouldn't be surprised if they would do that, just to also expand. you need language to fill that. And I'd rather have them delve from the treasures that Tolkien himself left behind than just making up dialogue themselves.
Oh, you won't get any argument on that from me.
I know. I'm just stating the obvious here. Speaking of games, War in the North is imminent, right? When is this game going to be available?
It's coming out next week, November 1st.
Holy moly. And in the show notes, I see some links to YouTube clips.
Those are to a documentary that was produced about them.
That's pretty cool. Is it about like the making of, or?
It's kind of interesting. It's a little bit about that, but it's more about it's simultaneously about the game and sort of the development of the game. Not really a making of, but just talking about the inspiration behind the game, and also about the larger cultural phenomenon of Tolkien's literature and its impact on popular culture.
Interesting.
And they've got interviews with Sean Astin and Dominic Monaghan and guys from and other sort of TV actors who are big Tolkien fans and the
nice.
Tolkien professors in there.
Yeah, I'm playing the video right now in the background, just to get an idea of what to expect. There are two video clips, so that's way too much information, too much material for us to play. But
I had a poster of Lord of the Rings when
oh,
I was
wow.
a kid. That was way before the movies came out. If you'd read Lord of the Rings, it was quite a cool thing, you know.
My first exposure to Lord of the Rings was realizing I needed to run to the bookstore to discover something about this Tolkien or Tolkien. And
Tolkien.
The person in the bookstore said, Tolkien? And I said, yeah, sort of feeling stupid. And they brought me over and showed me, you know, here's a whole shelf. And there you go. There's like 50 things.
It is fantastic. So, hey, Corey Olson, hold on. I got to play this as well. Man, I can't believe
Incredible,
this.
Incredible, the kind of cultural force that The Lord of the Rings continues to be. In the 50 years since they've been published, The Lord of the Rings has sold over 150 million copies. And the movies, of course, were some of the top grossing movies of all time, over $5.9 billion in sales.
I'm a pretty big Lord of the Rings fan. I don't dress up like any of the characters,
Brian
but just short of that, I love Tolkien and always have. It's the greatest fantasy thing ever.
Wow, this is a four-part documentary, and as you heard, it features our favorite Tolkien professor, Corey Olson, as well as some of the actors in the Lord of the Rings movies. And so I assume that Corey has met them, right?
Because they're
sitting in the same, it looks like a film set.
Actually, what's interesting about this is there's actually a post that just went up this morning, speaking of, you know, breaking news, at Middle Earth Network's news site that I'm going to plop into the show notes for you, that is a transcript of a conversation Corey and I had about this experience, because believe it or not, when they were filming this, I was there as well.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And so they filmed it over 2 days.
Yeah.
About a month and a half ago, and Dominic Monaghan was there Monday, and Corey flew out Tuesday, and I went and hung out with Corey. So we didn't get to meet Dominic, but we did meet Sean Astin.
Sweet. And yes. Was this in a studio, or because the
it
set,
was,
the background looks like it belongs in The Hobbit or in The Lord of the
so
Rings?
It's so cool. Yeah, it was in this thing called the Abbey San Ancino in Los Angeles. It was on site at this little sort of building that looks almost like a Spanish mission built in the early 20th century. And now what they do with it is they rent it out for filming constantly.
Interesting.
And they have this cellar in there that's got the low arch ceilings and the just very old-timey looking wooden walls and dirt floors. And so they just basically went into that cellar and decked it out. They put in tables and casks and just basically what they told us was they were going for the prancing pony effect.
Well, they definitely succeeded. They fooled me. I was like, this looks like a set from The Hobbit.
I know. It's pretty cool, isn't it? So, they did a really amazing job. The guy who did it the director's name is Mike Ballo, and he works for this company, that independent production company that does video game trailers and documentaries a lot. So they're professionals. They were excellent. Yeah, I got to say, Father, I was amazed at the number of people involved in this thing. There must have been 40 people on set.
Oh, well,
it's huge.
You know, it is
so big.
It's a big game. It's a huge. And we all know that the video game industry is sometimes with some of these games just as big or bigger than, you know, the movie industry. And so it makes sense that for a documentary that is done to promote the game that they will invest, because they know that they have to do something substantial to whet the appetite of all the fans. You can't just do a regular trailer. And so I think this is a great approach, especially because they interviewed a lot of, you know, well-known actors, not only people from The Hobbit, but I'm looking at this other website, follow the link in the show notes. They also interviewed comedian Brian Posehn, so that was the guy with the beard, and Kunal Nayar from Big Bang Theory, which is a great, great comedic sitcom.
Yeah, and also this gentleman, oh crap, I don't remember his name, but a guy from Machinima, which is they're the ones who are actually doing it on YouTube. Actually, there's an unfortunate story. This was supposed to run on the Sci-Fi Channel, and unfortunately, WB and Sci-Fi Channel had a bit of a disagreement over some logistical things, and they ended up not being able to run it.
Oh.
So they had this guy involved from Machinima, you know, which is this huge online video game media site that does all kinds of videos and podcasts and whatnot. And so Machinima stepped in and said, we'll promote it for you. We'll put it on our YouTube channel and stuff. So that's cool.
Well, Machinima has a huge following, and it is exactly the target audience for this video game.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, people were like, actually, that's probably a better place for this.
I guess so. Very cool. Oh, wow. I can't believe you were there and that you met Sean Astin.
Yeah, he was extremely nice. It was clear during his interview. It's really funny. They were interviewing him, and he was at the end of the day. And for some reason, toward the end of the day, there just started to be a lot more ambient noise. They had to keep pausing filming. There were birds flying over. There was a dog next door that kept barking and stuff like that. Anyway, occasionally when they would pause it, he'd be like, what is wrong with me? I thought I was going to be the like, you know, comedic element of this. And you guys ask me a question, and about 10 minutes into my answer, I start realize that I'm just, you know, sitting here giving these really, really deep answers, waxing philosophical. And that's exactly right. He was trying to be funny, but they kept asking him these questions about, like, how did being in this film impact you? And he would just go off on these really, really thoughtful, deep answers about how this has really changed his life.
I am not complaining. Actually, now I want to see that documentary even more. I think he's a great guy, and I can't hear to hear that side of the story as well.
Yeah, he was cool, and he sat and talked to us for about almost 10 minutes before he started trying to kind of edge away.
Fantastic. Oh, wow. Well, there you have it. That's why we have you on the show. It gives some credibility to this whole endeavor.
I just got to figure out how I can get him on the podcast.
Oh, you never know. You never know. We'll keep working the social network.
That's right.
And that's very cool. I see two episodes up. I guess that they're rolling this out over time. So definitely
number
go.
Three comes out tomorrow, and
excellent.
Number four comes out on Halloween.
Excellent. Definitely go to our show notes at thehobbit.sqpn.com. So thehobbit.sqpn.com for the links to all these videos and transcripts that we've been talking about.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. This is wonderful.
I meant to go back. Wander the paths of Mirkwood. Visit Lake Town, see the Lonely Mountain again. But age, it seems, has finally caught up with me.
Let's take a short break and thank our sponsors of Bluehost for their support of this episode. Bluehost is a great hosting company. I've got my own personal blog. I don't have a very serious blog. I'm more a talker than I'm a blogger. But every once in a while, I like to post photos on a blog just to show people what's going on in my life. Sometimes it's mundane and sometimes it's pretty cool. And so I tried to set up the easiest blog possible for me. So I just had this great theme that looks like a diary, and that's kind of what it is. And I auto-post photos from my iPhone. Whenever I tweet a photo, it also gets auto-posted on the blog. So I'm doing that thanks to Bluehost. For just $6.95 per month, I've got this great-looking website, and it was very, very easy to set up. Plus, what I really enjoy is that for the $6.95, not only do you get like limitless storage space and bandwidth, but you also get a .com domain name. So I'm RoderickVonHogan.com, which is pretty cool for, you know, considering the price and what you get for it. It is an amazing deal. So if you want to set up your own blog, why don't you go to thehobbit.sqpn.com and click on that Bluehost banner for more information or to set up an account. And for $6.95 per month, you really can't go wrong. I think it's a great deal. And so we recommend Bluehost for all your hosting needs. Back to the world of Middle-earth and Tolkien. Well, it seems that the hobbits are finally there in the Shire, in Matamata, in New Zealand. We talked about the rumors that, you know, it could start anytime now. But now there is visual proof, isn't it? There are photos from the set.
There's certainly suggestive photos that maybe aren't definitive proof from certain regions, although I think the ones from Matamata are definitely much more definitive. Yeah, that couldn't possibly be anything other than The Hobbit. So yeah, it looks like they're ramping up.
I really love the photos that were posted. I think it was on Middle Earth Network, right? Of the aerial photos of the Matamata area and.
I think they're photos that were released by the official production, because you can find the same photos on stuff.co.nz.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I guess they must be official, because otherwise how can you get this close to the set? But
I think they wouldn't have been too happy if there was an unauthorized helicopter flying over the set.
It can happen, though. It happened to George Lucas when he was filming in Tunisia, and a German movie magazine, actually rented a hot air balloon, and they just flew over the set and took lots and lots of photos. And apparently, wow, both George Lucas and Rick McCallum were just—they threatened to basically shut down the magazine forever. But it was an amazing scoop. So that was my initial idea when I saw these photos. Like, yeah, someone must have, you know, rented a hot air balloon. But you can tell that they are working near the there's a small lake on the premises of Matamata. Not far from the party tree. It's actually a bit down the hill. Most of the hobbit holes are on kind of integrated in a hill, and then if you follow the path, you first arrive at a small meadow where there's the party tree, and then if you go a little bit more to the right, you actually arrive at the water. And we've seen the bridge. The bridge wasn't there when I was visiting. But apparently they've rebuilt it, as well as a couple of houses. And I'm not sure. I can't really tell if this is different from what we saw in The Lord of the Rings, whether there are other buildings or whether the buildings themselves look different. I should probably go back and rewatch the movie and see if it's the same. But it's quite impressive that they had to kind of rebuild everything, because there was nothing left at the time. I'm seeing another photo here of the Hobbiton set, and this is taken actually from you see a lot of trucks and mm-hmm. green tents. Not sure what those are for, if it's for equipment or if it's temporary tents for the crew, or it's kind of hard to tell. But what you can tell is that the party tree is there. This huge tree that we saw during the anniversary, the birthday party of Bilbo and Frodo, and that party tree looks quite different now. It's there has been a huge storm after they finished filming The Lord of the Rings a couple of years ago. And the tree, because it's such an old and big tree, it took heavy damage. And so the tree is definitely not as beautiful as it used to be. And you can tell there are some holes actually in the branches. That was one of my questions that I had for the tour guide, the woman that showed us around on the set. I was like, so how are they going to solve that? Because, you know, the tree is supposed to be younger in The Hobbit, and it looks actually worse than it looked at the time in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And she said, well, yeah, that was a concern, but nothing that some CGI couldn't fix. And I guess I'm not even sure if we will see the party tree. I don't think it's actually necessary, because I don't recall any scenes that specifically mention the party tree in The Hobbit, or am I forgetting about something?
No, I don't think the party tree. I mean, there's always the chance there's some listener that's going to write in and say, "What's wrong with you, idiots? Don't you remember quote whatever on page whatever?" But I don't think it plays a huge role. We don't, you know, because we actually don't spend a lot of time in the Shire in The Hobbit, outside of Bag End. You know, like really, the beginning of The Hobbit, in contrast with The Lord of the Rings, focuses really on The Hobbit, on Bilbo. And they talk a little bit about hobbits in general in the Shire, but, Lord of the Rings, we get a much closer look, a much more detailed look at Hobbit and Shire culture. And there's the party, obviously, where we have the party tree, so...
I think that filming must be imminent. If you see all this activity around the site, because you got to keep in mind that they've been working on this set for years now. They were already planting trees and flowers and whatnot. I remember lots of apple trees and fruit trees that they were planting, and they were still very small. And this was 2 years ago. So, but now all of a sudden, it seems as if activity on the set is going in overdrive, and so I guess that is a sign that they will soon start filming the actual scenes there, and apparently there are more security guards also surrounding the area, which is very hard basically to fence off, because you can approach the set from any direction, so I'm not sure how they do that, but and of course there's huge interest for this movie, but I guess that. We'll probably see some photos of actors walking around in Matamata, and if when filming starts, and I just can't wait to see more. But I'm getting really excited when I see these aerial photos. I'm like, wow, it's for real now. And there is a third photo that I'm looking at. Again, you see the party tree. You also see the damage at like the upper half of the tree. And I'm trying to figure out where this photo was taken. Oh, I remember. Yes, this is from the other side. You're actually seeing part of the hill. And some of these hobbit holes have been restored. Very cool. And a difference that I noticed right away with what we saw in The Lord of the Rings is that at least some of the doors of the hobbit holes are now brightly colored. So there's a yellow door. There's a blue door. So that's interesting. Because I remember from the movie that most of these hobbit holes kind of looked identical, and they were all like green doors and brown doors, but not yellow and blue. That's new. You know, I'm just going over every single detail of these photos, of course, as a true fan is supposed to do. And on the other side of the bridge, there's quite a big set of looks like either an inn or a farm or something like that. And it looks like a very detailed set. So I wonder if we'll see any scenes taking place there or not.
If it's, I wonder what that is.
I don't know. I should go back to the Lord of the Rings games and try to find out if there's, you know, if we have any descriptions of the area. But isn't there supposed to be a mill or something of a water mill next to the bridge?
Maybe.
Vaguely remember something, and I think
there's definitely along Bagshot Row where they lived. There was like a mill and a lot of that kind of stuff. So maybe this is had something to do with that. I don't remember.
We'll dig
into
it.
Terrible geography. What can I say?
Oh, that's no problem. We have some time to chat about this, and we'll get back to these photos later when we know a little bit more. Again, go to our show notes on thehobbit.sqpn.com if you want to have a link to those new pictures from Matamata. It's very, very exciting stuff. Back to our show notes, because time is ticking and there's still so much news. The what's this about Gollum and family zipping into Queenstown?
Oh, it's basically about how his name suddenly escapes
Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis. it's like a little short thing about how they he took his family on a little vacation. I think so. He must have a break in the filming that he's doing.
Nice. Nice. I wonder if we'll see his kids in as cameos in the movie. We saw some of Peter Jackson's kids as hobbits, mm-hmm. So I wonder if we'll see more of the family in the movie.
Yeah. So yeah, it just says that they're taking a break from the filming and vacationing in Queenstown. I wonder what it's like to be known as Gollum's kids or Gollum's family.
Hey, if they want to stay actually in character, then perhaps his kids should be playing like CGI characters as well. Just do the motion capture. By the way, speaking of Andy Serkis, his latest movie, or the movie that he was featured in heavily, Tintin, takes the world by storm. I don't know about the buzz in the United States, but here in Europe, it's a real box office hit. And I think the numbers came in from the first few days, and apparently the movie did better than, well, this is actually not a compliment, it did better than Transformers 3.
Wow. But
no, it was really, they had impressive numbers, at least for European standards. Not as high as the last Harry Potter movie, but that is hard to beat. But definitely much, much better than the Transformers movie, which did actually pretty well, despite the fact that it's a horrible film franchise, and I will never see one of those Transformers movies ever again. But, oh gosh, I cannot stand Transformers. I hate Transformers. That's, of course, great news for not just for Andy Serkis, who plays Captain Haddock in the movie, and apparently did a fantastic job. He depicts his character is a kind of Tintin, for those of you that are not familiar with the franchise, is a Belgian comic about a young reporter who travels the world, and he encounters a captain who's always drunk and becomes his best buddy, and together they solve lots of mysteries and go from adventure to adventure. So Peter Jackson and Steven Spielberg collaborated on making a CGI movie, even in 3D, about the adventures of Tintin. And apparently Peter Jackson wants to go back and direct, actually, the second movie, the sequel to this Tintin movie. And according to a few interviews that I read, the entire series is conceived as a trilogy. But of course, they were releasing this in phases. They were afraid that since the American market is not very familiar with Tintin, it's much more of a European and a Eurasian phenomenon. It's also very popular in New Zealand. That is why Peter Jackson wanted to be a producer. That's because in New Zealand, every kid grows up with Tintin, just as we do here in Europe. But because it's virtually unknown in the United States, they figured, well, what if we released a movie first in Europe and in New Zealand and Australia, and then later on in December in the United States, and hopefully there will be so much buzz around this movie that it will also do well in the United States. Huh. But from what I heard, it's doing really well. It's a great movie. I'm probably going to see it tonight or tomorrow, and next week I'll tell you what I think of it.
That's a great strategy.
Actually, yeah, it's a very smart strategy, and I also think that by doing it this way, they can actually use the Tintin publicity because they flew over Spielberg and some actors to Brussels to do the promotion tour. They'll probably do the same thing in New Zealand, and then they'll have plenty of time to fly in a couple of the actors and perhaps even Peter Jackson himself and Spielberg for the premiere in the United States, and then of course, during the interviews, there will be lots of questions about The Hobbit as well. So they get this extended attention of the press for The Hobbit as well. So it's very smart marketing. The only downside, of course, is that if you release a movie in phases like they do now, that there is a heightened chance of people pirating the movie and, you know, putting up these shaky webcam versions. but the fact that this movie is in 3D, or at least it's available as usual in both in 2D and 3D, that's probably going to be enough extra incentive for people to go watch it for real. I read an interview on a UK site with a huge compliment for Tintin. The writer actually said, called it the best Indiana Jones movie Spielberg has ever done. That's kind of a tongue-in-cheek comment, but I thought it was great.
That's pretty funny.
It is. It feels like Indiana Jones, also because John Williams did the music. And so if you watch the trailer, you definitely get that that Steven Spielberg Indiana Jones vibe. So that's great news for Andy Serkis. And I think they also involved both Andy and Peter Jackson in the filming and the production of this because of the reliance on motion capture. So all the characters in the movie are done with the same motion capture technology that they use for The Hobbit right now. So, I'm excited about it. I can't wait to see this movie. Anyway, this is not The Secrets of Tintin. This is The Secrets of The Hobbit. If you want to hear more about the movie and about Tintin, and perhaps learn a bit about Tintin in preparation for the premiere of the movie later this year in the United States, you might want to check out our new podcast series about Tintin. And you can find that at tintin.sqpn.com. So tintin.sqpn.com. We do a new series where we go through all the background information surrounding the movie and the comic books. So Gollum is in Queenstown, and I think the story about the Hobbit drawings,
we kind of covered that last
week. Is there any news about the War in the North video game that we already touched upon?
Not anything particularly new. There's the game's coming out next week. There's been a lot of interesting coverage about it over at Middle Earth Network. Obviously, there's the article about Corey and I visiting the set of the documentary, and there's also going to be a podcast released on the Tolkien Professor podcast feed that's a recording of that conversation. Last week, we did an interview with one of the game designers for Middle Earth Network, and that's been airing on the station and released on our special Middle Earth Network special events podcast feed on iTunes. So if you want to hear an interview with one of the game designers, you can go do that. And I and one other gentleman are going to go visit Warner Brothers Interactive tomorrow afternoon and play the game.
Oh, I'm not jealous. I'm not jealous. Wow, that is awesome.
Yes.
Fantastic.
So I'll have a lot to tell you about it next week.
Are you going to do any coverage about that on Middle Earth Network Radio?
We're still sort of working on that. We haven't cleared yet whether they will let us record while we're there. But I imagine at a minimum that Tyler Michael Johnson, the guy who is going with me is a gentleman named Tyler Michael Johnson. He actually, if you've listened to Middle Earth Network Radio and you've heard the Ask Gollum segment, he's the guy that does the voice for that.
Nice.
He's really good. I imagine he and I will be doing probably something tomorrow afternoon, just right after we finish to share our thoughts, if they don't let us record from there.
That'd be great.
I'll keep you posted.
I'm looking forward to it. Speaking of video games, we got some feedback on our segment last week about the ancient Hobbit games from Brett Finley, who writes Dear Father Roderick and Company. I guess you're the company, and you should say Dave Kalin Company. I just wanted you to know how much I love both the Secrets of Middle Earth and Secrets of the Hobbit podcasts. Also, last time on Secrets of the Hobbit, you talked about the Hobbit video game that came out around the year 2003. I used to play this game on the original Xbox when it first came out, and you talking about it as well as the trailer you played during the episode brought upon me a wave of nostalgia and fond memories. Yeah, that's sometimes what games do. You kind of want to go back and play these old games again. I've read The Hobbit several times, writes Brett. I have some experience with video games, and I just wanted to say I really love this game. The art, gameplay, storytelling, and characters seem very close to the book, and I would encourage any Tolkien fan to play this game, regardless of the mediocre scores it may have received. So I think it would be a good idea for an episode if you analyzed and reviewed the game. You might be able to watch a playthrough on YouTube. Anyway, there's my two cents. Keep up the good work. Well, Brett, great feedback, and actually that's a pretty good tip to go and look up the game on YouTube. I forgot about that. I don't have to play the game myself. I can just go watch the videos that people record while they are playing the game, and that will probably give me at least an accelerated way to get through the story of the game, because I'm not very good at video games. I love playing them, but I never get anywhere. I can get stuck on a level for weeks, so that probably wouldn't be very good for our coverage. But I'll go check that out. By the way, if anyone else wants to send us email or feedback for us to read on the show, feel free to send us a mail at Tolkien@sqpn.com. That would be Tolkien@sqpn.com.
What's happening out there?
Shall I describe it to you? Or would you like me to find you a box?
And towards the end of the episode, we always take a look at what's happening in the world of the Tolkien and Hobbit fans. And there's always a lot of buzz in the on the internet and in the blogosphere about the Hobbit and about Tolkien. So, Dave, what's going on there in the fan, you know, on the level of the fans?
And I guess that we lost Dave because I can't hear
him. No.
Oh, he's there.
I muted myself during that thing and I forgot to unmute myself. I just started trying to talk.
Okay. So I was asking what was going on in the world of the fans. Sorry.
Sorry about that. Yes, there was
I remember the Silmarillion project that we talked about last week.
Yeah, that's still – we talked about that a little bit. We just touched on it very briefly, and I wanted to just remind people about it and really encourage them to go check it out if they hadn't had a chance. It's pretty fantastic. The video is just absolutely beautiful.
I would like to play the video. It's just 2 minutes long, or not even 2 minutes long. And from the website, I gather that these are Germans that are doing this.
That's right.
The site is in two languages, both in German and in English. So here is the Silmarillion. Arda, a world is rising. Let's see what they
– Arda. It. A world wider than the imagination of elves and mankind. It was built by potent spirits, and therefore they were named the Valar, the powers of the world.
Okay. It looks very filmic. I wonder if they filmed this in Germany. Oh, is that a female ent? What is that? A lady with a very ant-like headdress.
And there was Melkor. Great might was given to him by Ilúvatar, the One. And part he had in all the powers of the other Valar. But he turned them to evil purposes and squandered his strength in violence and tyranny.
The music is a bit loud, so I can't really hear everything that the voiceover is trying to convey. Pretty epic landscapes.
Took everything that was fair and corrupted it.
Okay, they might want to do a remix of the audio. Wow, that's pretty impressive. So, is this like a retelling or a kind of a visualization of the ancient history of Middle-earth? Because this looks like the real, like the prehistoric stuff, or like almost like the mythology of Middle-earth.
Yep, that's exactly what it is. It's a they're taking the earliest chapters of the Silmarillion, which describe the creation of Arda and the conflict between sort of the gods of Middle-earth early on. At least that's what's sort of being hinted at and depicted in this trailer. I don't know how big the scope of the project is.
Might be interesting to get some of these people online on one of our shows and just pick their brains a little bit about this project, because it looks very ambitious, but also pretty tough to visualize that ancient history, because there's no, you don't have any, like, it's not done before. There's just perhaps illustrations, and so yeah, I commend them for trying it out. But looking forward to seeing more of this. And of course, with The Hobbit, you'll see so much interest for the books. And so I guess that people will definitely be interested in a project like this. Because if you read The Silmarillion, that's actually quite tough for someone who's not familiar with the backstory of Middle-earth. And so a project like this that tries to visualize it a little bit can be actually very educational and help. Help the readers of the Silmarillion to know a little bit more who is who, even if you
and
don't have.
I think that's their sort of stated goal, that they just want to bring the Silmarillion to the masses.
That is a very laudable project. We've come to the end of our show again, and we didn't cover everything that was in our show notes, but we got pretty far. So, is there anything you want to plug this week?
One thing really quick. I want to encourage people to check out a new podcast called Beneath Your Feet. If you search for it on iTunes, you'll find it. And the URL is lotrobeneathyourfeet.com. I think he was inspired to do it, he told me, by Secrets of Middle Earth. He wanted to do sort of a travel show. And what he's going for is something that feels a lot like Anthony Bourdain's No Reservations travel show. It's very scripted, and it's very snarky at times. So I think you would really enjoy it, Father, and you should definitely have him on Secrets of Middle Earth one day.
I've already downloaded the episodes, and I can't wait to listen to them.
It's
always fun to travel around in Middle Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, perfect. Well, my tip of the week would just be for people, if they want to, if they're interested, to check out our new show about Tintin. Again, the address is tintin.sqpn.com. And our project is to go through all the stories, all the existing comic books, so that once the movie hits theaters, you will be very familiar with the backstory of this reporter and his drunk captain friend, played by Andy Serkis. So you'll catch all the little references and inside jokes that are part of the movie. Apparently it's full of little references. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit. We'll be back next week with more news from Middle-earth. And may the hair on your feet grow ever longer.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.